Shalom and welcome to Maharat Cast Season 3. The topic for this mini-series is Female, Same-Sex Intimacy and Halakha, A New Approach. I am Rabbi Jeff Fox, and I serve as the Rosh HaYeshiva and Dean of Faculty here at Maharat, and I am your host. This series will consist of 4 interviews of women who are scholars and leaders in their field. If you would like to read my complete tshuva on the topic, please go to www.yeshivatmaharat.org. In this episode, I interview Miriam Kabakoff, a pioneer in the field of from LGBTQ+ Jews, who currently serves as the co-executive director of Eshel. You can read more about Eshel in the notes. I have had the honor and privilege of working together with Miriam and Rabbi Steve Greenberg at the Eshel Parent Retreat for many years. I believe that this year's retreat was fully sold out. The group of people who attend these retreats are parents from a wide variety of Orthodox backgrounds who happen to have a gay kid. For many of the families who attend, this can be the first and sadly sometimes the only place in which they are able to talk with honesty about their children. There is so much shame and embarrassment that people often experience that there is a saying at the Eshel Parent Retreat that when the kid comes out of the closet, sadly sometimes the parents feel as though they must go back in. The fear of judgment from teachers, from mentors, from family members and rabbis is real. The parent retreat helps guide families through what can be a difficult journey based on the community in which they live. Thank God Eshel has done some amazing work, both with parents, with LGBTQ Jews, with schools and shuls. They do not advocate a particular halachic approach, but rather push for health and well-being. As I mentioned 2 weeks ago, people in closets do bad things. At some level, the bar is quite low. The main ask that Eshel is making is for people to be able to be present in Orthodox communities and not experience explicit homophobia, prejudice, and hate. I hope that you enjoy my conversation with Miriam Kabakoff. Miriam Kabakoff, welcome to the Yeshivat Maharat podcast. I'd like to begin by asking you to introduce yourself to our listeners and tell me a little bit about your own religious journey from where you began and where you are today.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me. So I'm Miriam, and I grew up on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, and I attended Jewish day school. My parents were traditional. They were living inside of Orthodox communities and spaces. I don't know that they would identify particularly as Orthodox themselves, but it didn't matter to them so much, but they more wanted their children to grow up very Jewishly knowledgeable and with the opportunity to live out our lives in a religious way and informed by Torah. So that was the great gift that I feel they gave to me and my siblings. And we all attended Jewish day school. There were 6 of us. We were like the famous Ramaz family who had 6 children all at once in day school, kind of a miracle. And me and my siblings all became even more religious than our parents. And both because of our day school education and somewhat in spite of it at times. But this was a very, very big part of my identity formation as an Orthodox person, you know, growing up and as a teenager, and as someone who was recognizing that maybe I was gay during that time. And it sort of was like happening all at the same time for me, but I was really very much devoted to my spiritual life and my religious life. And I was going to figure out the gay thing at some point in the future. And so I went on to live in Israel and to study in yeshiva there, and I did Shirut Lumi there. And yeah, so I don't know what else to tell you about my religious life, except that it was a modern Orthodox upbringing. And I think this is really significant because for me, growing up in that atmosphere, it was almost as if, like, I wouldn't say anything is possible. But if you want to live your life out as a religious person and there's some conflict that you're seeing in the world or inside of yourself, that there's some way that, you know, we're going to figure this out. Like the Torah piece of it is going to be figured out so that you can actually be a happy individual and live out your life as a religious person. And my father, Zichrona Livracha, used to take me to these medical ethics meetings at Beth Israel Hospital, where he worked for a long time, and Mount Sinai and the UJA Federation. So there was he sat on a medical ethics board, and I would just sit there. I was like really young, and I was like listening to all of these discussions between the doctors and the rabbis. And their goal was to make these very difficult ethical situations work out, you know, both halachically and for the best, what's best for the person. At that time, also, they were dealing with a lot of questions about people with AIDS. And that became part of the conversation, which was like an added, you know, interesting piece. And it was always about, you know, compassion for the person, which wasn't always really what the feeling was at that time. And the reason why I'm telling you this is because that was the Jewish education that I got, that, you know, we all have to be happy, healthy individuals, and we should be able to live the religious lives that we want to live. And so as I, you know, grew up and in my religious life and in every other part of me, and I realized that the gay thing wasn't going away as much as I prayed and hoped, I had to figure this out. And I had to make sure that I was going to be able to be both, you know, Orthodox and gay.
Did you actually try to pray the gay away, as sometimes people say it? Was that a...
Oh, absolutely. Sure. It was a part of my prayers. It was a part of everything that I did. I remember going to a rabbi from my yeshiva that I was in, and I came out to him. It was like the first person I ever told. And he said, oh, all you need to do is nurture your feminine side. And the way that you'll nurture your feminine side is that you go and you should work with children, and they will bring out that side of you. And then you will discover that you're really attracted to men. I was like, really? Okay. Who knew? And so that's when I did a year of Shirut Lumi. I worked at Eitz Hanim Hospital for children who had mental illness. And it was the most incredible year of my life. And I learned so much. And it kind of put me in this path that I'm in now in other ways, you know, both in the mental health field. And it didn't really work. So I didn't end up, you know, marrying a guy, even though I tried and I almost got engaged. But it didn't happen for me. And so at that point, I was sort of like, okay, I have to figure this out and move on and accept myself and eventually hope that my family will accept me. And yeah, so
I think that it's actually a very beautiful vision that we should be able to both be happy and healthy individuals and live our lives through a lens of Torah. Maybe something that people don't remember quite often enough. Quite simply inspiring. So you came out to this rabbi, and then I guess you imagined that if you worked hard enough with these kids, it would work. And then at some stage, eventually you came out, I guess, more to yourself and to the community, to your family. Can you share a little bit about what that process was like? Also, just to give a sense that this was at a time when it wasn't quite so simple to come out, particularly in the Orthodox world, but in the general public as well.
Right. Nobody in my high school was out at all. Now I know a few people who identify as LGBTQ who were in my high school with me. But nobody was out. Like, that was completely taboo. Like, you'd never come out unless you wanted to be kicked out. Yeah. So whatever, I had, you know, a lot of different experiences. I went to Stern College. I left Stern College. Maybe I ran away from Stern College. And then I found myself back in Israel, and I happened upon this group of women. It was like completely, you know, like that feeling of like, this was totally meant to be. I went to Israel for 2 weeks and I ended up staying for 2 years because I found this community of women that were Orthodox lesbians. And it was like completely underground. Some of them were married, you know, some of them had children, some of them were still trying to marry men, some of them were not. And it changed my life because I had never met anybody who I felt had those two things in common, you know, like me. Mm-hmm. And that's where I started sort of like really, you know, I guess coming out or feeling like integrated. You know, and we did a lot of things together, this group of women. We celebrated, you know, the holidays. We did a Shabbat every week. And two women got married, actually. One woman conducted the ceremony. They put it together. Obviously, they didn't want to have a kiddushin because that wasn't what they, you know, believed in. But they did some kind of a commitment ceremony that had like a religious flavor, and it was very beautiful. So that sort of was like, for me, you know, a model, like I can do this, and I can do this in community, and I don't have to be alone. And that's when I came back. And that was the beginning of the Orthodox group in Jerusalem. And then I came back to New York and I started the Orthodox group there. And this was in, you know, New York City. And there were a lot of other things that were happening in New York City at the time, like CBST was you know, the gay synagogue in New York was becoming very strong.
Can you just, sorry to interrupt you. Can you just give us approximate years? So what are we talking about here? When is this?
I think that was like in the 90s. Yeah. 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 The mid 90s, I came back. And there were a lot of groups that were starting to form that had LGBTQ and Jewish identities, not shuls, not synagogues, even though CBST was there in New York City and it was very strong, but groups that were like under the radar. So like the Gay and Lesbian Yeshiva Day School alumni group, you know, I was involved with kicking that off. And then, you know, the women, that became very male dominated. So like the women sort of broke away, and that was sort of like part of the Orthodox formation as well. But we were all together.
Were the women in Yerushalayim, was that yet Orthodox, or Orthodox wasn't here until the 90s in New York?
It was. It was the Orthodox group. That's what it was named, the Orthodox, I want to say by my friend Sue Khan, but she'll kill me if I'm wrong. And she was there. A lot of people were there who I'm still in touch with. Sadly, my friend Susan Moser, Zichron Alevracha, passed away a few years ago, but she was really the center of it. She was a great community builder. And so...
Feels like it's a word that we don't use anymore.
Oh, dyke? Yeah. It's not so used. It's true. It's true. But it worked because of Orthodox, right?
Yeah.
How could we resist?
So in the 90s, when you came back from Israel, you came to New York. And so there were all these other groups forming. Who else was being formed
So there was this group called the Jewish Activists, Gays and Lesbians, JAGL. And it was mostly conservadox and Orthodox people, like, kind of like wanting to change. We were working mostly in the JTS space, you know, the Jewish Theological Seminary. They were not ordaining LGBTQ people at all. And so we started with a student group at JCS coming and speaking to the rabbinical students and telling our stories of growing up religious and gay and what that's like. And, you know, eventually they started to ordain gays and lesbians and now trans people. But that was like sort of the start of, let's tell our stories. Let's try to open up hearts so that we can change people's minds, you know? And there was a nice, strong community in New York City, Orthodox LGBTQ people.
Were the group of people who were gathering then feeling like you were trying to push around halacha in particular? Was it about social change? What was it about?
It was more like we don't have an answer about the halacha, but there were also rabbis that were dealing with it. Like I remember reading when I was really young, I don't know, like I picked up the Jewish Week randomly in my parents' apartment. And I just remember like, I don't want to misquote, but I think it was Rabbi Riskin was talking, like there was a letter to like the rabbi or something. And he responded, you know, in writing about how gay people can't help being gay and therefore they should be treated a certain way so that they should be able to live out their lives as a gay person with you being compassionate towards them, right? So believe it or not, that was kind of revolutionary for me to hear because that was not what I was hearing. So I would say like being involved with this group JAGL, we were not trying to like talk halacha, just like at HL today, we really don't talk halacha too much. We don't try to like argue about it because it's very hard to argue about halacha. You know, it's almost not even an argument, but it's like, here I am. What am I supposed to do with my life? You know, I'm Orthodox. I'm traditional. I want to live this kind of a life. Help me figure out how to do that and not be a miserable human being. Like, how can I, you know, do it in a good way that's good for me and good for everyone around me?
Yeah.
And more than that, that I can participate in Jewish life fully. You know what I mean? Like, for me, having children was not an option. It wasn't an option not to. Like I was raised in a big family. I tried to not put pressure on myself, but I always knew I would have children. That was like a non-negotiable, you know, for me. And also to be with somebody, you know, so like, how am I supposed to do these things? Thank God, you know, I've successfully managed to do those things and, you know, very happy with my life. And I feel like I really do contribute to the Jewish community and I am a part of a strong Jewish community in many different ways. And, you know, that is part of like living a Jewish life, that you're part of a community, you know, whether you're married or not, but you count and you matter and you make a difference in people's lives. And that's what I wanted to do.
Again, that seems so obvious and quite beautiful and inspiring. When you came out kind of in your family setting, what was that like with your siblings and parents?
Well, I came out to one sibling who I knew would be my greatest ally. And she really is. She still is, but she always was. And I knew that she would be my safe person. It took me a while to come out to my parents. I knew that they would really have a very hard time with this, and they would not understand, and they would be really brokenhearted about it. And my other siblings, you know, they're all like, you know, different shades of Orthodox. And I wasn't sure how it would go, but like the Chabadnik was like immediately accepting, like all Chabadniks are, you know, oh, every Jew is welcome. You know, the more yeshivish one was, had a much harder time, and she had to ask her rabbi how to sort of deal with me, you know. And then, you know, the other ones, you know, in their own time, they came around to sort of seeing me for who I am and also just being open to who I am. But everyone had their own path, and I knew it would be really difficult, and it was really difficult. But, you know, in the end of the day, what my parents taught us was like, we just all really need to be together in this world. Like, they gave us each other to be each other's friends and allies. And that's what we're doing now in my life. So it was a really long journey for me. It was not easy with them, but we're all in a really good place. So I would just sort of like, I don't know, I like to tell people that, because it, immediately people really feel like this is how, the way it is today is the way it's going to be in 10 years. And that's just not true.
I had the honor of meeting your dad before he passed away, one or two of the parent Shabbatonim, and he seemed totally supportive, and I had a lot of nachas watching you at the front of the room. Seemed like a very special relationship.
Yeah.
So before we get on to your current professional work, I wanted to talk about the amazing book or anthology that you edited called Keep Your Wives Away From Them, Orthodox Women and Unorthodox Desires. I wonder if you could share a little bit of the story of how the book kind of got created, how you brought together the people who are writers, some of whom I didn't even realize kind of showed up in there. It was quite exciting to reread and to look back at the table of contents and some of the authors, people that I know, and why you thought that was an important contribution.
So I thought it was important because I didn't have anywhere to go when I was coming out to myself as an Orthodox person. I didn't have any literature to read, you know, no one to talk to. I mean, that's not really true. I had people to talk to, but I had to find those people. And we always think, like, I see this now, like LGBTQ people think that Orthodox LGBTQ people think that they are reinventing the wheel every time they do something. Mm. It seems like weddings and having children. And there were people who came before me and figured out how to have children, right? And how to have weddings. And, you know, so it's like, we all think like we're creating this thing anew because there's no central location for sharing information. I mean, of course, like there are some websites now, but there's no traditions that are being passed on, right? So like when you get married in your shul, like, you know, in your community, there's sort of like a blueprint, like, okay, this is what you do. And the rabbi tells you, this is what you're going to do. This is the basic ceremony. And then if you wanted to add something of your own, like this is where you can do those things. And it's very set, you know, when you're gay, like nothing, there's nothing. So like you actually have to create it. And because there's no one central location, like we're not all the gay Orthodox people are not all in one building. So we don't have a way of sharing information like easily, freely, that and traditions that we pass on. So we all have to do this for ourselves. Wait, what was the question that you asked me that sort of
how did the book get together? And how did you find the writers? And it's like quite an amazing group of people.
So I thought it was really important to have a place where people could go to read stories about people who they could identify with. So that was sort of the impetus for the book. And I knew that there were many people out there who I had not met yet, who were like me, because, you know, and then I, you know, in studying the literature, I saw in the times of Rambam, there were these women in his community who were just like me. And he says, in my brain, he's saying to the men of the community, there are these women in your community who will try to, you know, get with the other women in your wives. So don't let your wives go into their homes, and don't let these women into your home. You know, so keep your wives away from these women. So that was like the first like place that I could see in the you know, the rabbinic literature documented that there were this group of women, like the groups of women that I had kept meeting every time I went to another community. Like, you know, women, I don't know, maybe I was just like, I found these women, they found me. I, you know, it helps putting in ads in newspapers and B'nai Brak, like that helped a lot. And then I wanted to expand that. And, you know, and that part of my life sort of ended. I met my partner and I started having children, but I wanted to capture that moment of, for me personally, of like meeting people like myself. So that was where I got the idea to create this anthology. And there was an anthology that I did read when I was much younger called Lesbian Nuns Breaking Silence. And that was my dream, to do that for Jewish women, for Orthodox women. You know, it's this the incredible book of these nuns telling their stories about being gay and coming out and or not coming out, living in a convent. And so that was my inspiration for this book. And I got basically through Facebook, I just kind of spread the word. And I did know some people that I wanted to ask specifically. There are some scholarly pieces in there. And I knew Charlotta von Robert from Stanford. Like I knew that she had done a lot of work on gender. And so I wanted to include that there as well. Joy Ladin had reached out to me. I had never heard of Joy Ladin. And that was exciting. And I was like, oh my God, you teach at Stern. Wow. And Leah Lax, I had never met her. And she's a writer and she's continuing to write about this, I think, in her work. And she's very musical. She does a lot of cool creative things. Anyway, it was just this very wonderful group of women who reached out to me, you know, and saw the call for work and who I knew also. So it's that's also how the book came about.
It's interesting to know, you note in the introduction, it was published around 2010, I think. Is that right? 2010?
Yeah.
So I think 2004 is when Rabbi Greenberg and Rabbi Rappaport published their books. And much of the writing of the Orthodox community has focused on men. And there are many reasons why that might be the case. And this was, I think, one of the first anthologies to really be both in the voices of women, but also be about women, and both in terms of just the lived experience. And there is a halakhic, very important halakhic piece there as well. So I wonder if you could just reflect on what it means to always kind of get stuck into Leviticus, even though Vayikra isn't really about you.
Right. Great question. It's so annoying. It's like, A, I don't exist. You know, and I mean, in a certain way, women are a little bit under the radar, you know, in the Torah Shebichtav, right? Like, so it's not, there's no one sentence in the Torah that says two women are not allowed to do X, Y, or Z together. Like, it doesn't say that, you know, you'll be kicked out. It is an abomination. It doesn't say that. So either the focus is on Vayikra because it's in Vayikra and it's, you know, right there in writing, or because there's some, in general, like we live in a, you know, very male dominated world, and, you know, and Judaism is very patriarchal. So it's like, maybe we're mostly focused on men because we're mostly focused on men most of the time, right? Like, I don't know. So I don't know if it's like the, you know, the Torah prohibition versus a rabbinic prohibition, or if it's sociologically people are more, you know, focused on men. But I guess it's both. You know, makes you invisible. It reinforces the invisibility of women. And it's also a blessing in disguise because we don't have to argue so much about what, like, we don't need to fight that fight as strongly as men do. Mm-hmm. And I think that women tend not to have as much of a hang up. Like most of the Orthodox gay men that I've encountered, they're very disturbed by Vayikra and they try to figure out ways around it but it kind of plagues them.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel blessed, maybe. I don't know what the word is. I feel grateful. I feel lucky, you know, that I don't have to like think about that. But it doesn't take away from the fact that both, you know, rabbinically and also just when people use that term Das Torah, like this isn't the way. This is not the way of the world. This isn't the way we're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And so, and that doesn't matter where it's in writing or what's in writing. It's just like the strong, you know, rabbinic voice telling you that your life is just wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that has been really painful and scary and, you know, upsetting and hard to get around.
Any interesting or surprising readers or places that the book ended up, or did anybody reach out after the book came out and share in a way that you weren't expecting?
So I guess what I heard a lot from non-Jewish people, I did a lot of book readings in different places, some, you know, some Jewish venues, but a lot of like bookstores, or like the people that would show up to those readings were religious Christians or Mormons or people who had grown up in those religious communities and had come out, and they felt very much like this was their story too.
Wow. Any nuns?
Yeah. And the funny thing is that as soon as the book got published, like a year later, no, it was like around the time the book got published, I had recently moved to the Twin Cities, to St. Paul, Minnesota. And I randomly was like looking up the editor of Lesbian Nuns Breaking Silence. And I see that she lives like literally a few miles from my house. So I reached out to her and we took this beautiful walk around a lake, and, you know, she was great. And so that was really wonderful. And I gave her a copy of the book. And
that's very sweet.
She's, yeah.
Very sweet. Okay, well, now I wanted to fast forward just a little bit. You are currently serve as the executive director and we're the co-founder of an amazing organization called Eshel. So I wanted to just give you a chance to talk a little bit about the work that you do there and the work that Eshel does more broadly in the Orthodox community.
So Eshel is a support and advocacy and an educational organization where we give support to LGBTQ people who are Orthodox. We build community for them, with them, and their parents. So that people can find each other. We educate their families, their communities, their rabbis, their teachers about what it means to be LGBTQ and Orthodox. And then often we end up in a position of trying to like help somebody in through a difficult situation, like somebody, you know, is getting kicked out of their shul, or somebody is trying to convert, or a teenager wants to transition in high school. And we end up being like advocates and go-betweens between, you know, the people in charge and the family or the person. And we try to like make the path for them so that they can move forward. And we have a lot of different ways that we do that. So we have a lot of support groups and social groups, and that's also a really important thing because we know that we can only really do this work in community and because of the community. When we first began, the first project we ran was a speakers bureau. It was a speakers training because we were sure that Orthodox rabbis were going to be banging on our door like night and day to hear our stories because we're so interesting and compelling and we have so much to say. And so we trained a bunch of people and there was not a lot of banging on the doors. So we were like, wait a minute, something's wrong with this. They, not only did they not bang on our doors, but we started to bang on their doors and they were like, the doors were shut. And later on, we found a little bit more about like, what was that about? For many rabbis, it's a huge threat to them to have us in their community or to have these conversations in their communities, because the people who are sort of looking over their shoulders, looking at what they're doing, feel that it's the wrong thing to do. And some people in power, you know, have used their power to threaten the people that we wanted to talk with, to take away what they had, you know, whether it's their job or whether it's an eruv a rabbi's trying to put up or a hechter that the rabbi has over his, you know, social hall and his shul. Like all those things, you know, are threatened if they open up the door to this conversation even.
Right. And just, I guess, to say a word of what you mean when you say conversation, meaning, are you talking about somebody trying to paskin for a community, somebody telling a story? Like, what is it that you think they were so afraid of?
So I think like it somehow it threatens the social order in people's minds. Like, oh, what will happen next? First, it's gay people. And then who will be next and what will be next? I think part of that is the scary thing for them. But why are people homophobic? Why do people not like gay people? Like, I don't know, maybe it touches something inside of them that they're afraid to admit, or they're just afraid of difference. And so we figured that what we needed to do, instead of like banging on their doors and begging them to listen to our stories that would open up their hearts and just see that we're just like everybody else and we want the same thing as every other Orthodox person, that what we had to do was to start more from the grassroots and give people support. And that's when we started working with parents, because the parents weren't leaving their Orthodox communities. The kids were leaving, but the parents were staying, and the parents really, really needed support and help. They had no clue, like their kid comes out to them and, you know, and like they can't go to the rabbi. The last person they go to is their rabbi. We did a study of our parent community and we found that out. So for them, they just really needed community. And the parent community, as you know, you've been there, is really a lovely, strong group of people. And they find their voice and then they find a way to go back to their rabbis and their communities and speak up. And so that's sort of the way I think that we have been able to not get in the door, because we were already in the door, you know, but give people the confidence to say, like, my kid is gay. He had his bris here. He had his bar mitzvah here. I want him to have his wedding here, you know, and it's not a challenge about, it's not challenging halachic norms, because it's not about changing halacha, really. It's mostly about working it out so that I can have the trajectory of living an Orthodox life in the community that I choose.
Yeah, you say simple things that are very profound. Halavai. You've been in this for a long time.
sort of starting in the 90s from Orthodox to many other organizations and now leadership at Eshel. I wonder if you kind of outline the way in which things have changed over, call it 30 years, in terms of what it means to be a gay woman in the Orthodox community in particular, and also just in general in terms of the LGBT community and Orthodoxy more broadly.
So there's a lot that has changed, but I would say I've noticed it more in the past 10 years. Like, for as long as Eshel and some of these early groups have been around, like, that's where I've started to notice the real changes. And, you know, part of it is like, everything is above ground now. Before Eshel started, there was a few other groups, like JQY was existing, and they were very out loud about what they were doing. But a lot of the other groups were like very much underground and under the radar. It was just about like creating community amongst ourselves and not speaking out to the establishment. So like what I've seen change is people's willingness to talk about this stuff and also the language people are using. You know, I've said this before, I don't know, you know, I'm sure people also notice it, but LGBTQ is a really different thing to say than homosexual or people with same-sex attraction. Those are terms that were used when homosexuality was pathologized. And, you know, when people think that there is an ability to cure same-sex attraction, that's like, you know, a term that's associated in my mind with a cure. So the language has changed, the willingness to have this conversation has changed, and kids are coming out across the board younger and younger in Orthodox communities as well as general community. And Orthodox camps and schools can no longer pretend that they do not exist. So that's really what has changed, like, you know, in the media and television and, you know, starting with like the Ellen show and like, you know, all throughout, like when people start seeing themselves mirrored in places and when they have access to social media and they can see themselves out there, you know, in the world in different places, then they start having language for themselves and they're able to, you know, come out more easily, I think. And more people know what that is, you know. And there's a reference. Now, this isn't happening that much in the Haredi community, but it's also happening there as well. You know, we have a lot of Haredi people coming to our national LGBTQ retreat. And, you know, I think for them, maybe it takes longer.
Yeah, I'll just say that you yourself as a person kind of, you know, hold up a mirror, or perhaps the way to say it is provide a window into what it means to live the life of an Orthodox woman who happens to be gay, which is impressive. And I have seen it and witnessed it firsthand at the Eshel parent Shabbatons, which have been extraordinarily impactful in my own personal life as a parent and as a human being. So thank you for that amazing work.
Thank you.
I want to ask one last question, which is, you sort of described the process of coming out and then being blessed to now have children. I wonder if you could just tell our listeners, what does Shabbos look like in your home? How does your life work? What does your life look like if you sort of describe that arc of your journey from Ramaz to today? How does it look similar or different religiously?
It's a great question. So my life has been very much defined by, like, where I've lived has been a little bit defined by the career path of my spouse, who's an academic. And so I've lived in places I would never have dreamed that I would have lived. And leaving the island of Manhattan, I don't have as many choices of where to daven and, you know, all that. But wherever I've lived, I've always, because we're religious, we've, you know, tried to cultivate and create Shabbos community around us so that we are not isolated and alone, and davening options that work for us. You know, sadly, my children, for us, it's a little sad, they don't have a day school that's nearby. So we do a lot of online learning and providing them with all the experiences that we can, you know, day schools when we could, and Jewish summer camps. So yeah, I mean, I live, you know, really typical, average, traditional Jewish life in a very small town. So that's been interesting. That's been a whole other kind of journey, you know, figuring out how to make it work when you're not no longer in a major Jewish, you know, amongst a major Jewish population. And I think a lot of people struggle with that. You know, Eshel is a national organization that we get people from all over and, you know, very far-flung places, alone, not just in their LGBTQ identity, but in their Orthodox identity. And so, you know, I relate to that struggle also. Yeah. But Friday afternoon, you'll come. We'll be cooking like crazy and trying not to go into the 18 minutes, but we do.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Miriam. Is there anything else you want to share?
Well, just thank you. Thank you for the work you're doing. And yeah, and I love that you're a part of the ACEL parent community. It's meant so much to so many people. So thank you.
The honor is all mine.
Thank you to Miriam Kabakov for your hard work and commitment for these many years. To learn more about Yeshivat Maharat in general, and this topic in particular, please check out www.yeshivatmaharat.org. Shalom.